back again.
Two Dimension, episode 31.
Wow, 31 already. We're old. And Don is back.
Yeah, I'm back, and it seems like you guys have had a wild, wild ride.
Oh, my. Out of control, totally. We need you to pull the reins in to keep us, in check.
Well, Dallas is the voice of reason, but...
Yeah.
You know, I guess several beers later, it goes away.
Yeah, it's gone, man.
Yeah, you know you're in trouble when you come back, you know, from time you miss a show, and the first thing you hear is, I think you're going to be mad. What?
Yeah, well, it was a fun time, actually. It was one that was not anything that I expected it to be, but it was definitely, in retrospect, it was cool.
Well, Dallas told me some of it. You can't say that. I think I'm going to edit it out. And then you told me a couple things. You can't say that.
Yeah, well,
we
did.
Talking about farting in the microphones. And
yeah, that's not going to happen.
I was telling my daughter about it. She was kind of horrified. And later when I mentioned it was video games, which she's into, and I told her some of the things that you guys said they had said. And I said, farting in the microphones. He goes, well, it's too bad they said those other things. That sounded like a great episode. So I listened through it, and I thought, well, this is all okay. I mean, it's... So, as a matter of fact, we got some feedback on it. Our friend Jean, she brought up that it was a wild ride, but it was pretty fun, so...
So we got some positives on it.
Yeah, so...
So, in the meantime, I guess the big news... is that the Avengers movie is made $1 billion or something worldwide.
Yeah, I haven't heard any bad thing on it. I know Dallas and Ruck, I guess they went to the midnight showing Friday night when it came out.
Okay.
And Dallas, I haven't talked to Ruck, but Dallas, he, nothing bad to say. I think Ben, another friend of ours at work, had seen it. And Dallas had told me, he said, guarantee me you'll go at the movies and see it. And I guess he feels it's very important to see it on a big screen. But I want to see Pirates, Band of Misfits, you know.
Which one is that?
That's by the people that did Wallace and Gromit, Flushed Away, Chicken Run. I love those movies, and I like Pirates. And when Dallas and Ben had told me about, you got to see Avengers, I said, hold on, stop motion Pirates. Beat fake superheroes.
you know, I was looking up the Avengers, and I completely forgot when the book started out. It was Ant-Man, Iron Man, Hulk, and Thor. Gee, why didn't they put Ant-Man in the movie?
And the Wasp. Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Iron Man and Thor and Hulk.
I mean, Black Widow didn't come on until later on, but I guess they always have to do that in the movies.
Well... it's people like you and I, as my wife has said, she hates seeing movies based on books I've read because I always complain, and
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know. Well, I think actually Ant-Man would be kind of cool.
I think so, too. Why not? I mean, I know they made fun of him in that episode of Saturday Night Live years ago.
Or the human strength.
But, it probably is cool, I mean, it looks really good. And I'll probably end up seeing it at some point. I don't know if there's dollar theaters anymore, but I'm sure I'll try to catch it at the, matinee or something like that. I don't know if I'm going to pay the full, Monty for that thing. But it does look really cool. And I guess Marvel, Disney made their money back from the John Carter thing, so they must be all happy.
Oh, one of my nephews in the Philippines on Facebook, he was talking about the movie. He asked me if I'd seen it. He says, no. And he says, oh, Uncle, you have to go see it. This is when it first came out. But I'm thinking, you've already seen it? And, Mr. Media, another podcasting area I like quite well, he posted that going to see the Avengers, he says, I have to say, the closest experience I can come up with is seeing Star Wars for the first time back in 1977.
Wow.
I have trouble believing that.
Yeah, I saw that in a drive-in, actually, in 77, so there you go.
I saw the theater, and I could not believe it. I just remember every time you went to see it, the line just went outside the theater, waiting for a mile. And it was that way for months. And everybody's cheering. I never seen anything like it. It was amazing.
Yeah, that was the movie, not to get on a movie Jag. I do that on another podcast. That was a movie that kind of changed the game for sci-fi. You know, before that, it was like you can get away with some cheapo effects. And, there was Silent Running. There was a few movies that had some in 2001, yeah. But that was the one that, like, okay, no more, Women of the Prehistoric Planet or, Assignment Outer Space or anything like that anymore. We're, like, playing with big special effects and, big budgets, and Spielberg comes in. So yeah, that was the game changer as far as that genre goes.
That changed everything. It changed everything.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, it was something else.
Yeah, but getting back to the Avengers and the comic book movies, did you see the Iron Mans?
Yeah, like I said, I've always said I'm not a huge superhero movie fan. But when Iron Man came out, I could care less. I remember I listened to some podcast, and they'd complain about they cast Robert Downey Jr. in it. And when the movie came out, it was just the opposite. People were freaking out, saying how great it was. And over the summer, I got interested to see the movie myself. I asked my wife, and she just gave me this look like she'd rather swallow a box of razor blades. And I asked my daughter, and she goes, "I don't like movies based on superheroes." Well, yeah, but... So I never did. I did go out and buy the movie when it came out. I was dying to see it. And I loved it. When I was watching at home, my daughter came in and started asking questions. So I started at the beginning and watched it again with her. And then she kept coming, "Man, I really enjoyed Iron Man." Well, it was a good movie. Later I got my wife to watch it with me. And, she, kind of lukewarm about it, but yeah, I watched it several times.
I thought it was good.
It was a great movie. I really enjoyed it. I never saw the second
one. No, me neither. I never saw the second one. Now, I didn't like the first Hulk that they did, like, a few years ago, the Ang Lee directed one, because the Hulk was like the size of a building or whatever. But proportionally, it wasn't animated right, but some people do like it. That I saw, but I didn't see Thor.
Yeah, I've never seen any of the Hulk movies. I've heard them bash the Ang Lee movie, and then the other one. It's
supposed to be better, but I didn't see that one either.
Dallas had lent me the Captain America movie, and it started out, I thought, man, this is great. I loved how the guy was skinny at the beginning.
Right.
And I loved how, which they never quite showed in the comic, was even though, he had a small physique and, bad health, he had that heroic temperament. He was kind of short-tempered out of aggravation, but he had what it took, and later on they're showing about training and stuff and, what he was doing. And the whole thing, like, they showed him at the World's Fair. I loved all the incidental stuff. You could see the original Human Torch in the glass, all the posters, all the stuff going on, all the costumes, clothing and stuff. I love how they had Tony Stark's father there, with the car, the anti-gravity car. It's kind of like what Nick Fury drove in the comics.
Yeah, right.
And I thought, well, this is fantastic. This is one of the best movies I ever saw. And I thought, I'm so going to buy this. And then the middle part of the movie, to me, just kind of laid down on the ground and dragged across. I thought, this is too much.
Right.
And then towards the end, it got awesome again. So I guess you cut out the middle 35 minutes of it.
Yeah, because these things are like over 2 hours long sometimes. It's like you're used to like 90 minutes or maybe like 100, and then,
I had its moments. I loved how it ended,
Yeah.
I thought, well, this is something. I never saw Thor. It looked kind of cheesy from what I saw. Now, I've never heard anybody say it wasn't good. My buddy Britt in Texas, we were just talking about it. He really enjoyed the film. He thought they did a good job. But, Dallas says before you see the Avengers, you need to see Thor. Somebody's going to loan it to me, but I was going to be gone, so I didn't bother.
Right, right.
But I don't know. I still really don't have any interest to see the Avengers. I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure I'd enjoy it. This morning in class, one of my students was just going on about how much he liked it, and he kept saying, "You got to see it. It's really good." Well, okay, Still not really.
Yeah, I mean, I'll check it out. I guess I have to as a fanboy. Well, anyway.
On my experience, my wife and I did go to see Pirates: Band of Misfits, and I am buying that sucker when it comes out. It's I don't know about Avengers, but stop motion pirates, you can't go wrong. So.
You're right on, man. Now let's take a trip down memory lane to the past. What do you remember? What the first superhero movie you ever saw? Well, let me guess for you.
Okay.
The Adam West Batman movie.
Yeah, I'd have to say that probably was. DC, when they put out those big dollar, tabloid-sized comics in the 70s, they would always have pictures of, again, the Adam West Batman stuff, the George Reeves Superman, and they have some of the serials. They had the old Batman and Robin movie serial, the Captain Marvel movie serial, the Kirk Allen Superman stuff.
Yeah.
And I think in Marvel, some of their calendars and stuff, they show the Captain America serial.
Yeah.
Where he's holding a gun, didn't have the wings on his head.
Yeah.
I've never seen any of those. They'd always show the shadow, you know, some of that stuff. I've never seen those.
I've seen a few of them. I never saw them when I was a kid. I saw them later on.
Well, when I was five, we lived in Denver, Colorado, and they were showing the Buster Crab Flash Gordon serials every afternoon.
Those are good.
Those are awesome.
Yeah.
And, I just was kind of amazed when I watched them. At first I thought, wait a minute, what is this? Because, you know, it was right before Prince Planet, right after Prince Planet
came
on.
That is another awesome show.
Yeah, that was what I watched it for. But I remember my friend would always be at the house watching it with me, and he liked it because Flash Gordon would go underwater on one of the ships, you know, when the serial first starts. He goes, I like that guy because he goes underwater. And I guess they put on this cape that, you know, when you jumped out of the spaceship, you know, you could kind of fly. They were Martian wings or something. I don't know what they're called. But then one day, my mom had called it Flash Gordon. Well, that's who he is. I ended up buying all three of those on DVD.
Yeah. Didn't he do Buck Rogers, too?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Buster Crabbe. Buster Crabbe was an Olympic gold medal swimmer.
And Tarzan, too, then.
Yeah, he basically... He was awesome in real life, and that's why he was awesome on the screen. I think he was the first Tarzan.
Yep. No, you Herman know. Bricks was.
Oh, was he?
Elmo Lincoln was some guy in the Silence, and then Herman Bricks, who later changed his name to Bruce Bennett, and then I can't remember when Weissmuller started or Buster Crabbe, but he was a Tarzan, yeah.
Yeah, well, Johnny Weissmuller, he was awesome. I love those movies of him.
Did you ever see the unedited first movie? There's
Tarzan
a little bit,
is made, yeah, but she's swimming naked.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, they didn't show that one when I was watching it when I was a kid. I was like, yikes.
Yeah, I got it on videotape. I never saw this part.
Maureen O'Sullivan, who's Mia Farrow's mother.
Well, my mom always loved her. And whenever I saw the Tarzan stuff in the afternoons, it was always the Jane with the golden hair. And my mom said, oh, I don't like her. I says, I like Maureen O'Sullivan with that beautiful black hair. And I do remember living in Utah, my parents had watched those Tarzan movies, and I remember Jane had black hair. I'd always get confused as a kid. Wait a minute, I thought she had black hair. Kind of found out I wasn't remembering wrong. I just didn't know that they switched actresses.
Right, yeah, they did. I forgot who the second one was, but yeah, I just remember Maureen O'Sullivan. So yeah, it was Tarzan. The Captain Marvel was a good serial.
I've never seen any of these. I've just seen them in magazines and stuff.
Oh, yeah. That one was Tom Tyler, I think was his name. That was a good one, actually.
Well, I heard the Batman and Robin one was actually pretty good, too. Have you seen it?
Yeah, Batman's got, like, floppy ears, and Robin Robin looks like he's about 30, so I don't know.
Well, yeah. You know, my friend and I were always laughing about it because, you know, we always compared it to the Adam West, and you're right, it looked kind of floppy and dorky, but... Looking back on it, that's kind of what I like, you know. You know, Iron Man, I like the Iron Man with the two points on the front of his visor.
I liked Iron Man when he was in the big gold suit with the roller skates, man. I'd love to have that.
But I like the old clunky, you know, Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon kind of stuff. Those Flash Gordon serials, I pop them in all the time. I never get tired of watching them.
Yep.
And, you know, when they did that 80s movie with the Queen soundtrack.
You love that one, too.
I absolutely love that.
And, Sam Jones, right?
My daughter was upset at me when I made her sit down and watch the movie with me one afternoon when she was a little kid. And she still complains about it. But to me, when I was in college when they came out. And first, the Robin Williams Popeye movie came out, which I love. And then the Flash Gordon, you know, movie came out. And people were telling me it's dumb. I went to see both of those three times, and I loved it every time.
Yep, definitely.
And the next year they were at the Dollar Movies, and it was all college students watching it, and every time the Queen would sing it, all the guys in the theater, Flash! Uh-huh. It was a great movie, and it's great to make fun of, and I never get tired of it.
And a great comic book adaptation by Al Williamson.
I've never seen that.
I have
told
it
me.
Somewhere. It's beautiful.
Well, don't show it to me, because it'll be leaving your house.
Yeah, okay. I'll just show you, like a page from it online
on the internet.
Or whatever. Yeah, there was the serials where it started, the Captain America. I mean, the Shadow was pulps. And, the Flash Gordons and Tarzan. Buster Crabbe actually played a Western character. I forgot which one it was, but he played a Western character.
I've seen it in when you want to order DVDs, they have it. I've never seen it. I've never seen any of his stuff except the Flash Gordon. Except, like I said, trade magazines and stuff.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that, when in the 70s when they did the Gil Gerard Buck Rogers?
Yeah.
Did you ever know that he was on that? Buster Crabbe was on one episode?
Yeah, he guessed it on one, yeah. I never saw it, but I know he did it, yeah.
Okay, well, listen, that was awesome, too. I love that bad NBC TV show. You know, at the time, there wasn't really anything like it.
With Tweaky, right?
Yeah, Twiggy, which Mel Blanc did the voice.
But Wilma Deering, Erin Gray, was like in that suit, man. That was like... smoke, okay? She was hot.
Well, Gary Coleman was on the episode sometimes.
No.
Yeah, he was, I guess he's supposed to be some kind of genius on the show. And then I saw
what are you talking about, Willis?
But he said, I guess Beef was gone, and they were trying to use Lizard as a substitute.
Oh,
and Gil Gerard, Buck Rogers, was always making Lizard burgers. And Gary Coleman, I think he was from the past, but he was a genius. And every once in a while, he would show up on a show and he'd talk to Buck Rogers about he found this lizard meat and he did this to try this to make lizard burgers. Okay, well,
yeah,
human everyday things. We're always trying to find a good hamburger.
Yeah, even if it's lizard, just give it some, just give it that meat thing and make it taste good. Yum. We got plenty of lizards around here, so don't give me any ideas.
But there was one episode of Buck Rogers. I don't know if it was a special, like a longer one or something, but it was a part where they had to get the pilots out, and there was some war, and they were down. And they said they had to call different people in. They even had to call the reserves. And it was Buster Crabbe.
Oh, my.
And I'm in high school. I'm watching it. My dad was watching it with me. And my dad doesn't really care for that kind of stuff, but he's like, I'm all excited. I haven't seen those serials since I was 5 years old, and I never forgot them. And I'm sitting at the he had a mustache. He was an older man, but he was still fit. He was wearing a white suit, no paunch. He's still awesome.
Yeah.
And my dad was smiling. He said that Buster Crabbe was a vitamin salesman. And so I guess he was in his 70s, and he could still look like he could whip anybody in the house. I thought, listen, he won a gold medal. He played Flash Gordon. He was awesome all the way up to the end. I'll tell you, you are the superhero.
Yeah, Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers. I can't think
Tarzan.
Of
it.
Tarzan. I can't think of the Western guy. It's going to piss me off. I'll figure it out later, but I can't think about it right now. But yeah, Buster Crabbe. Did that. And then, I guess around the 50s, you had the suit. It wasn't a movie, but you had the Superman TV show with George Reeves. That was a classic.
That was in the 50s?
That started in the 50s.
Yeah.
I think it ended in the 50s, too. Or maybe 61 or whatever, but yeah.
Yeah, because I remember as a kid in the 60s, that was always the big thing.
Oh, sure, yeah.
We always watched it. That's how we knew it.
There was that one episode I remember seeing as a kid that freaked me out. And I don't know if it was the first one or not. It was a two-parter. Superman and the Mole Men, those little dwarf guys that came out of the sewer, they freaked me out, actually. I was like, oh, that's creepy, but I enjoyed that a lot, actually.
Is that the George Reeves?
Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah.
So those were all was it a movie or was it a TV
show?
No,
I think it was I think they were made for TV. I mean, it might have been a two-part episode or something. I'm not 100% sure, but I remember that one was either in two parts or it was a longer episode, and it freaked me out.
Yeah, it was... Man, that was something.
Yeah, that one is actually, that was the first time I remember seeing like a superhero on television that, you know, because back in the 60s when I first, you know, acknowledged that there was television, I saw TV. It was cartoons, but then it was like, it's the Adventures of Superman. And I was like, oh, wow, it's kind of neat. You know, he's kind of cool. Even though he's got, like, some padding on his shoulders, he looks like, you know, he could kick your ass, I guess, you know. But, yeah, that was the one that I remember first.
Well, have you ever seen the Kirk Allen Superman serials?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, how are they?
They're not bad. I mean, jog my memory. I'm not sure if they animated and flying or not on those, but it's not bad. I mean, it's not great. Anything that was made back then, it was just like, you know, the cheese factor is real high. Kind of like when people see, like, movie like the Batman movie from the 60s, the cheese factor is real high. Even though the cheese factor was semi, you know, high back then on it a little bit, but now it's like even more like, oh my God, you know, Adam West Batman's got a gut or something like that. But you know, back then it was just like, wow, look at all these colorful characters or whatever.
Oh yeah, it was in there. It was always kind of over the top and fun. I saw Kirk Allen by accident at the Tampa Con back in like 1988.
Cool.
Like I said, I never saw the serials. I just saw it sometimes in science fiction magazines. They'd always talk about superheroes in the serials, and it had pictures of Kirk Allen. And some of the girls in school would see that magazine. That doesn't even look like Superman, you know. That's why he looks like a ballet dancer. But
right.
I don't know. I never minded it. But like I said, Will Eisner was, you know, at the show. And he came out of a panel, and I thought it was kind of neat because basically, he came out with a circle of young men around him talking about comic books. And I was standing there talking to Michael Kaluta when Will Eisner came out with all these guys. And I guess basically somebody else had to take the room and the conversation didn't stop. But Will Eisner was talking with great enthusiasm. And these guys were bringing things up, and Will Eisner was basically talking to them like they were all friends and equals. And I remember he said, well, that's the reason I didn't like it. And what they were doing was talking about Watchmen. And he was talking about how meticulous the story was. And, I mean, he didn't say anything like it was bad. He certainly respected it. But he said, well, that's the reason I didn't care for it. And he was explaining nicely about how it was so planned out and meticulous to the story, where he'd rather be more open and free-flowing. But I thought, well, that's something. And the conversation went, and they were kind of crowded in that one area, so they walked over to this other table nobody was at. And Will Eisner was there standing talking to these young men. And this guy wearing an ascot came by, and, you know, older man too. And then Will Eisner said, oh, Kirk, please, I'm sorry, I didn't mean, oh, Will, that's not a problem, don't worry about it, Will.
Cool.
And he sat down, and he kind of uncovered his table, but I realized it was Kirk Allen, and I didn't go talk to him. I thought, you are a Superman. Well, that's fine, you know. And, but he looked like, you know, those thespians they always talk about. He was wearing an ascot.
Yeah,
even
master,
he's
master thespian from John Lovitz. Yeah, acting.
But, so, you know, I won't hear any bad things about Kirk Allen or Will Eisner. I thought that was neat. It looked like they were friends and, you know, respected each other.
Yeah, they've probably seen each other at conventions throughout the years. And there was radio shows, too. I know there was a Superman radio show. Obviously, The Shadow and, you know, but even Doc Savage and all that stuff had radio shows. But I guess at this point, after the Superman TV show, I guess the next one that I remember seeing was Batman TV show, which was like Beatles almost. And
yeah, that was
And
major.
The insanity of it. I mean, all the merchandising and the magazine covers and like kids going bananas, and that's what got us into comics, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, we've talked about that at length. That was major, and that kind of resurged comic books, you know.
Oh, big time, yeah.
That really made a big one.
Yeah, that and like the Marvel cartoons that came out like a year later. That's what the Batman movie got me into comics, and then the Marvel cartoons, however cheap and cheesy they may be, That's what got me into like understanding the Marvel universe. Because before then, it was just like, oh, this looks nice. This looks like nice art. It's colorful. But then when you you know, saw like Iron Man and Thor and you know, all those guys, you're like, oh, this is pretty
neat. On a limited basis, you could even see toys of both DC characters and sometimes the Marvel characters, and then it just vanished when the 70s came in.
The Migos were still going on,
I think. The Migos came later in the 70s, but there was a period in the early 70s where you couldn't find anything, and then after that, Migo came out with those little dolls, and then you'd find kind of cheap, like Spider-Man and Superman with parachutes, you know, little plastic stuff.
Yeah, Spider-Man and the Spider-Man Doom Buggy or whatever. I don't know.
But it was. Have you ever seen those old Captain America serials that they had?
I saw one once. That's one segment of one, and again, one of them wasn't that great. Yeah. But he's the weirdest part. I don't remember if this is the super villain had a weapon. And I think it was called the Great Vibrator. And I was like, really? Okay. Whatever.
Well,
you know
that's there are some things that they had before that means different things now.
Definitely.
Well, the first issue of Action Comics, they had a character. It was an Errol Flynn type character with a sword and a cape, and he was the Gay Ghost.
All right, there you go.
And, you know, when DC republished these, it was in 1974, and, you know, gay still meant happy.
Well, the Flintstones had a gay old time.
Yeah, right? Gay old time. But then you started having kids that same year. Well, are you gay? And I look at them, what, is this a trick question? You know, I didn't quite understand. I knew there was something going on. And these girls kept asking different guys in the class, and they're looking like, and one guy said, no, like it was horrible. And so I went and asked him later, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
And he told me what it meant. One, I didn't really understand what he was explaining either. But, that's when it changed, and the Gay Ghost meant something different, I guess. But
yeah, and then the Batman TV show, which was like, again, they're playing it on local stations here now. Again, that Batman and the Green Hornet, too, which was a radio show also, I guess. Yeah, you know, that was the first time you saw Bruce Lee, too. Where
it was a radio show, and I think they made pulps.
Pulps,
out of it,
and
too.
I think there was comic books. I think there may have been comic books.
Well, the guy that created Green Hornet also created Lone Ranger.
That's right. I guess he's kind of a superhero. There's a lineage there.
Oh, yeah. Well,
as long as he wears a mask, I guess he's considered some kind of a superhero.
Yeah, and he always had an ethnic sidekick.
Yeah, Tonto.
Well, and Kato, you know.
Yeah, you're right. I never thought about that.
I never did. I was listening to somebody talking about it. I never knew that was the same guy. But, yeah, they were both radio shows.
Yeah, that's right. The Lone Ranger was 50s. So, yep, that's right. They did make a Lone Ranger movie in the 70s, but it was not real well, and the actor was actually dubbed.
Was he really?
Yeah, he was dubbed.
Well, see, I went to see it. My brother and I went. I had a blast. It wasn't a great movie. And I remember my boss, I worked at that silkscreen place at the time, and he went to see it. And somebody made a comment. He goes, oh, you mean the disco Lone Ranger? Well, he rolled his eyes, and they kept talking about the gay Tonto. He wasn't gay, but they're talking about how fabulous his hair was.
Oh, God.
But, you know, at the same time, my brother and I went to see it, and we had a good time, especially when he go, hi-ho, Silver, away. The little comic store that we had in Oklahoma I went to, they were huge Clayton Moore fans. They had pictures.
Clayton Moore, that's his name.
The Man
and
Woman.
Jay Silverheels.
Yeah, Jay Silverheels, who was a real Indian. But they had pictures of them at a convention, a man and woman that ran the store, with Clayton Moore, who is the Lone Ranger.
Yeah, hell yeah.
You know, and I was talking about the movie, thinking they'd like it. They had all kinds of Lone Ranger stuff in the store, you know, hanging on the walls that they collected. And when I was telling them, kind of excited, so we're not going to go see the movie. Why? It's pretty good. And they said, well, we're not going to go because of what they did to Clayton Moore, because they wasn't allowing him to wear the mask.
That's right. They stopped him from doing it at conventions, right?
Yeah, well, everywhere. I don't know if he did conventions, but he used to be at shopping centers. You know, he used
to opening up shopping centers.
But he was, they showed it on TV one time. I was in high school. This is in the late 70s, but they had him there with the guns and showing tricks and stuff. And he says, boys and girls, what I'm showing you here is, I'm showing these aren't real guns. And he says, these are just tricks. He says, you can do this with your cap gun or any toy like that. But listen to me, don't ever play with a real gun. And he said it with love, but with commanding. I mean, to me, even though I was in high school and you're wanting to think these kind of things are dorky, you still sat up straight and listened. I was on TV watching it. But yeah, he was something else. And then I guess because of the movie, they said he was an older version. They didn't want him around, so they basically took him to court, and he couldn't wear the mask. And then Foster Grants did a really awesome commercial with him in it.
Right.
Yeah, talking about he couldn't wear the mask, so what did you switch to? And it showed him wearing Foster Grant's.
That's awesome.
He still pulled it off. He was wearing a blue shirt with a white cowboy hat, and he had Foster Grant's. You didn't need a mask, Clayton Moore. You were the man.
That's right.
You were the Lone Ranger.
That's right, and still are.
Yeah.
I don't think they've dared make another Lone Ranger movie.
But I saw that again in college. They showed it on the campus in 82. And, we were all watching it, and I didn't realize Christopher Lloyd, the guy that played Jim, he was Burt Cannon, Butch Cannondish, the bad guy in The Lone Ranger.
Oh, okay.
Everybody knew him from Taxi, but somebody, hey, that's Jim. I never realized that the first time I saw it.
Hey, listen, man, well, let's take a break now. Let's play some music. So,
who are we going to play?
You know what? I'm going to play the John Spencer Blues Explosion with Bell Bottoms. How about that?
Okay, let's go.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Right now, I got to tell you about the fabulous, most groovy Bell Bottoms. Bell Bottoms. Yeah!
Okay, we're back. And Al, who was that?
John Spencer Blues Explosion from the CD Orange with Bell Bottoms.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed to tell you, I'm not familiar with this.
Oh, when you hear you'll his music is kind of like funk, blues, 70s madness with a little bit of Elvis sprinkled on top.
Was he well known? I mean,
you know, he was an underground guy in the 90s. It's most of the stuff is in the 90s. I think he's still around. I think they broke up, and they might be getting back together again. But it was funny. I'm having these weird, like, musical flashbacks. It was a couple of weeks ago. I was thinking of the movie Mechanical World by Spirit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, okay, I have to get this record now to get this song out of my head, and I did, and it was great. I loved it. So then, like, all of a sudden, it's like John Spencer Blues Explosion. I'm like, oh, okay. So I go into the, you know, into my CDs, and I find Orange there with Bell Bottoms. I went, yeah, this is kind of cool, you know. It's kind of wacky, nutty, punky, bluesy, you know, Elvisy. So yeah, it's awesome. You'll hear it.
All right.
So back to the superheroes on celluloid or TV or, you know, whatever other media besides paper.
Well, you know, again, back to the Lone Ranger. My introduction to the Lone Ranger, I hadn't seen the Clayton Moore stuff until I was in high school. They were showing in the afternoon. One of the channels in Oklahoma City started showing the Lone Ranger. They'd show the George Reeves Superman. So that's when I found out they were in color. I thought they were all black and white.
Which one was in color? Lone Ranger was in color?
Oh, well, yeah, both of them.
I'd never seen the Lone Ranger in color.
Well, I imagine the first season was like in black and white.
Because I didn't have a color TV set back
then.
Well,
growing up, we didn't either, and all the George Reeves were in color, I mean, in black and white.
Yeah.
And then when they brought it back, this is the late 70s, I guess, 1979. One summer, they started showing those. Again, I had a job, but every once in a while, I have the day off and see it. My brother watched the block. My boss's kids watched the block. But when they were advertising it, there was some disco song where these women are saying, I love you, Superman, super, super, Superman.
Oh, yeah, right. Superman, man.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that thing.
But they were, I don't remember the artist or anything, but they used to play it on the radio. Half the time, it seemed like those women were in another room and kind of half asleep when they were singing it. But
yeah, they were on something.
But anyway, what was it, WKY, Channel 4 in Oklahoma City, they were playing the George Reeves show, but it was like a montage of stuff, and they had that song going in the background,
yeah.
And they said, like, Superman, weekdays, 4 o'clock.
Yeah, we're talking disco era now.
Yeah, but it was in color. I'm like, those weren't in color?
I think maybe one season was or something.
Well, no, it was on Word Balloon. Marty Pascal was talking about it. He said when they were DC Comics was in charge of that. They owned the show. And they said that, I don't remember the name of the man that did that, but he said that he basically looked at the color wasn't even there, but he realized color would be coming. So I guess they did the first season in black and white, and they switched to color before there was even color televisions.
No kidding.
So, but I know the first season was in black and white. I think they switched to color in the second one, but most of those episodes are color.
I have never seen those in color because I don't even think they're out on DVD that I know of.
Oh, well, yeah. I think they have one of those movies on DVD, but it's black and white.
Yeah, I've seen it in black and white. Yeah, wow,
but
that's interesting.
The Lone Rangers, the TV show I saw on the same block, I watched it a few times. I have seen some in black and white, but most of those were in color. And this is before colorization, you know.
Yeah, because from what I remember, I guess it was sporadic color on TV, but the year that everything was in living color was like 66 or something. I guess before it was hit and miss. Some shows would be, some wouldn't, but I guess maybe they did it with those. I don't remember ever seeing them in
color. Well, you see old shows and it'll say like FBI in color at the bottom. They always let you
know.
Yeah,
that was a big deal at that point.
Well, in the 80s, it would say in stereo at the bottom of the title.
Right.
Now it's
HD. Yeah, I don't know where they're going to go to after this, but whatever.
But, they'll find something.
They'll find another medium, but yeah, Lone Ranger.
But they had a cartoon. I was six.
Yeah, they had a Filmation Lone Ranger, didn't they?
Well, they did in the late 70s. That one looked pretty good. I think my brother watched it. But they had another one in 1967. Because I watched it, maybe it was earlier than that, 65. I think we watched it when I was in Colorado, but it was on Saturday mornings. But I don't know if it stand up to me now, but at the time, I thought it was kind of amazing. Cause it looked like they were using really rough pencils. It was color, but the lines looked kind of like rough pencil and charcoal. And I know at the beginning, they always played the William Tell Overture, you know.
Right.
And it would show the Lone Ranger in silver and in Tonto, and they're running, and basically the ground is coming apart like an earthquake, and they're running away from the cracks in the ground. And it was clever how they put that. I don't know what studio did that cartoon.
Filmation?
It didn't look like anything they had done at the time, but it could have been. But sometimes some of the drawings look kind of crude, and some of it, the backgrounds looked like they were heavily illustrated backgrounds, kind of like Johnny Quest.
Okay.
But it had a unique look, and I remember they had one kid that was a bad guy that kind of had a gravelly voice, and he looked like a marionette or something. But they had different bad guys in it. I don't know how long. I just remember my dad was a huge Lone Ranger fan. I was a little kid, and I'd watch it. And, you know, me and my friend were watching the show. We were six, and we kept saying, "Hi, old Silver." We were trying to figure out what Tonto said. And my dad said, he says, "Get him up, Scout." Well, it's just your Scout. His horse's name was Scout. But you always hear a Lone Ranger, "Hi, ho, Silver. Get him up, Scout." I've never seen the car. I've looked it up. I don't know who did it.
Yeah,
I've never seen it again. But it ran for a few years. I guess I must have been 5 and 6 years old.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it, but I don't remember watching it on Saturday mornings.
Yeah, and again, sometimes you remember these shows, and they were really something when you were a kid, and you watch them now, okay, well.
Of them are like that, but they still have bring back some memories.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it really warmed and illuminated your childhood, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I guess in the 70s, I'm not sure the timeline. Now, this was before, but remember this one, which isn't, I guess at that time it wasn't a comic book character, but did you ever see the Doc Savage movie with Ron Ely?
Yeah, I did see it. I was 13 when I saw it.
You know, it has camp value to it. You know, I can't say I dislike it.
Well, they showed that commercial, and the thing that got everybody was they had that animated kind of snake that had the green eye that was shooting laser beams at everybody going through that ship or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's incredible. And the first thing I thought was, this is going to be rated R, because all those kind of movies are rated R, and we couldn't see them. I thought, I wish I could see it. My parents won't let it. And they kind of found out it was rated G. And then my parents were telling me Ron Ely was Tarzan in in the early 60s, we used to watch it every week. And I thought, really? And me and my two best friends went to see it at the movies. And it was corny. But I loved it. It was hard to find anything like that, and I kind of knew it was over the top. I still loved it, and how he kept telling everybody, "You're a brick," and he kind of lightly punched the woman in the chin.
Yeah,
Mona, you're a brick. What a jerk.
But it didn't do well. I don't think it was a hit or anything.
Well,
like that.
I've heard, in the 80s, people were complaining about doing silly movies. I guess they were scared they were going to make the Batman movie silly, and the Batman movie that they planned for years and years, but they kept bringing up Doc Savage was a huge property, and all the paperback books were real popular. I used to see them in the bookstores all the time.
Painting. The Shadow and the Avenger and the Destroyer. Were they both Kenneth Robeson or?
I think
Kenneth Robeson did Doc Savage and the Avengers maybe, and Maxwell Grant was the Shadow guy. Well, it was those two. It was those two there.
Yeah, but you could always see them in the bookstores. You know, people reading them all the time.
Yeah.
But they say after the Ron Ely movie came out, that was the end of it. Nobody would touch it. I don't know.
I remember some Shadow paperbacks that have Steranko covers that were real nice. And the Doc Savages were all by James Bama, who's one of the great illustrators.
They've always tried. I remember they had the comic book, the Marvel comic. I guess Ross Andrew drew.
Yeah, inked by Dizininga, who just another sadly passed away. Yeah, inked by Dizininga. Yeah, they were nice.
But
it was a magazine, a black and white magazine.
Well, the one I saw was a regular comic book.
Oh, the ones that I remember seeing were magazines.
But one of my friends bought it. He says, it's not really like the movie. And he's talking about how he made some of the guys kind of super heroic and some kind of too big fisted.
Yeah.
I remember his mom, my friend's mom said it was dumb. Well, you saw the movie? No, I'm talking about reading the comic book. It just looked dumb. Well,
no.
Well, you know, when you're a kid, I've never seen the movie again. I remember my two buddies who went to see it. He goes, you know, when I saw the commercial, I thought that movie's going to be rated R. Yeah, I did too. Of course, when you saw it, you could tell it was never. It was...
No. General audiences.
Yeah, well, some of the guys I went to high school with, we talked about that movie, and like I said, I always talked about it with great fondness, and these guys like, God, it was so stupid. How could you like it? It's for little kids. Well,
but you know what? I seem to remember, and I could be wrong, but in either in the early 70s or the late 60s, some horror movies being rated G, and then when I saw them, I was like, really? You know, or maybe PG or something like that. I was like, really? There's like a lot of violence, and I almost saw some nudity in here. This is just... Somebody must have slipped the MPAA like a couple of bucks to like, you know, chill out on this one so they can get some kids to go see it. I don't know, but
well,
yeah, it's hard.
All the way, you know, when I was a kid.
Because I thought if it had any violence, it gave it a PG.
Yeah, that's how it was. Basically, then the PG was the kiss of death.
Yeah.
A lot of kids weren't allowed to see anything unless it was rated G. And I remember, it was 1974. My social studies teacher would talk about some of these movies that was going to come out. And, you know, there was stuff that we studied. There was one about these two cops. They did a movie called Super Cops.
But I remember there was a comic book of Super Cops, too.
Oh, okay. Well, but I remember the movie, and they were talking about it. And in one of the school magazines, they had pictures of the actual cops and pictures of the movie. And our teacher was talking about, I guess he read about it and heard parts. And everybody's really interested. And one girl in the class said, "What'll it be rated? PG?"
No.
And then she goes, "My mama, you know, a lot of us couldn't see that."
Was
so,
it rated R? No.
I don't know. It might have been. But
he didn't go.
Even if it was PG, I wouldn't be able to see it. And then Star Wars came out.
Yeah, well, there you go.
And after that,
the world changed.
The world changed, and PG was okay. You know.
Yeah. PG meant. Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, Star Wars could have been rated G, but they made it PG, and after that, rated G movies are basically documentaries. And
or
really,
Disney.
Yeah, really lame kid shows.
Or like The Computer Who Wore Tennis Shoes and, you know, Son of Flubber and, you know, all that good
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. But
So the Doc Savage was like early 70s. I know I'll be missing something, but the next thing that I remember was those made-for-TV Captain America movies with Rep Brown as Captain America with some kind of a motorcycle helmet.
Well, no, there was Wonder Woman, the Linda Carter Wonder Woman.
Yeah, around the same time, that's right. Now, she was smoking hot.
Oh, yeah.
Well, as Wonder Woman.
Well, before that, I
there was a TV movie of Wonder Woman, too.
Kathy Lee Crosby.
Yeah.
I had never seen that. It was on late at night. I remember... a couple of guys I knew in 7th grade were telling me about it. I said, it was pretty good. And then, what was it? I was reading a Wonder Woman comic, and one of my best friends, he saw that movie late at night, and he couldn't stop talking about it. And every time he'd see a Wonder Woman comic, he'd keep pointing at it, saying, oh, God, she's so ugly compared to the Wonder Woman on that movie. But she didn't look like Wonder Woman. She didn't have the costume. She's blonde hair.
No. Once again, Hollywood changing everything. But anyway.
It was just the name, but... Then when the Linda Carter one came out, I mean, she looked like Wonder Woman. The costume looked like Wonder Woman, and it was huge, you know.
That's the I think, for my money, she was the best recreation of a comic book character. She looked like I thought Wonder Woman should look like. I mean, Batman, they got to give him all the padding, all the armor now. Iron Man looked pretty good, though.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for my money, it was Linda Carter, yeah.
Well, I like flat graphics. I like two. That's why we call the show Two Dimension.
Yeah.
I like two-dimensional flat graphics, and I just love the title design on that. The name Wonder Woman was from the old comic book,
right? Right.
And had all the stars coming out and stuff. And I mean, normally whenever they do comic book superhero stuff on television or movies, they always make it kind of flighty and over the top, and they don't respect the material. But in this one, they made it look like a comic book, but they weren't. Goofy. I mean, there were silly things to it, but
silly.
I don't think it was always intended, and they never really kind of talked down to it, even if it was kind of fun.
It started out, the first season is set in World War II, and then as the years went on, the 3 years anyway, they became, the last two seasons were modernized, and then it got a little bit silly towards the end.
Yeah, well, they made them like a Secret Service or something.
Yeah. They changed up the whole basic idea of it, but...
Well, that's when the show was kind of going away anyway.
Yeah, but Linda Carter was like always something good to watch or whatever. And then the Hulk, too, I guess. Right?
Well, yeah, and the Hulk came out, and that was a huge show. That one, I was actually kind of surprised. That was an extremely popular show, and it didn't matter where you were. Even parents talked about that. That was a show everybody talked about. The stories are really strong.
It was like The Fugitive.
Yeah, it was like The Fugitive. And the music, everything, it was extremely popular. My wife, they did a show in the late 80s, I guess, a Hulk movie.
Yeah, The Trial of the Hulk or something.
Yeah, and my wife says, oh, we're so watching this. Really? You know that? And she was telling me in the Philippines, you know, a lot of people didn't have TVs. But one family or town had a TV, and they would watch it through their window.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, well, did the people get mad? Oh, no, they opened the windows and told us to watch. You know, they were sharing it for everybody.
That's nice.
But Myrna said they stood there outside somebody's window and watched it, and she loved the Hulk. And I guess at the time, in the late 80s, they did Daredevil on the Hulk. Rex Smith, and it wasn't the red suit, but it was kind of neat. It had Kingpin in it. Of course, Kingpin had hair and a beard.
That's right. I completely forgot about that.
And I think I saw pictures in a magazine. They had Thor, but I never saw that one.
I do remember that too. He didn't really look like the Marvel Thor, but it was a take on it, I guess.
But
I never liked the Hulk. Actually, I never really cared for the show that much. I always thought Lou Ferrigno looked stupid with the fright wig on his head, you know. But I guess that's the best you could do at the
time. Well, you know, the first time I ever saw that was on the newspaper. They always had those newsprint TV guys inside the, you know, newspaper.
I still have one. I saved one from the early 80s.
Well, they had one with Lou Ferrigno as the Hulk. It was just his head shot. It wasn't his body. And my dad was kind of I don't know if he really make fun of it. Don, do you see the Hulk? He was saying it like that, and I thought, it looked like one of my friends at school with a fright wig trying to be silly. And I thought, oh, that's kind of embarrassing. And I was really surprised that they were going to do a TV show. And then when it came out, I like Bill Bixby. Somehow Bill Bixby I always liked. I like when they do limited theatrics. You know, like in that one, he'd always say, don't make me angry. You won't like me when I'm angry. Next thing you know, he had those contacts. He changed his eyes and he had that expression. Yeah. Then it showed part of the shirt rip and there's green skin underneath it. And then it showed the other one where Lou Ferrigno would stand up straight. The old Star Trek series, how they do camera shots and limit, it's like stage production.
Sure it was.
I love how they figure these things out to change it. I mean, I do like a lot of the special effects now. But sometimes I liked how they kind of overcame limitations by
these
things.
They had to use your imagination.
Exactly.
What a concept.
But as a kid, I never missed Incredible Hulk, and I used to show it on Friday nights, and me and my friends would all get together and watch it, and I loved the show. I stopped watching it, but...
It went on for like 5 years or so.
Yeah, but it was popular. I always liked how it was kind of sad at the end. And that
You had to go from town to town. It was like, I guess I got to leave this town now.
Yeah.
Without the Hulk tore it all up, I guess I got to go.
Yeah, but I mean, I liked them. I've never seen them since, but I did like them at the time.
Yeah, that was a big show.
Well, then, that was a huge show, and that one, I think that's the first basically comic book property that was on movies or TV that people took seriously. I mean,
I think so. Yeah.
It wasn't like Batman where they thought it was silly and kind of talked down to it. That one was treated with, you know. It was a sincere show, and it was basically an adult show, and it was extremely popular.
Yeah, even though it was, you know, the Hulk and Lou Ferrigno with a fright wig, people just kind of gravitated towards it. I guess it's a drama element. It pushed the drama element more than the superhero, theatric whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of story going on, a lot of Bill Bixby, you know, acting and all that good stuff.
But then I guess at the same time, they had some other properties Marvel put out. They put out a Spider-Man movie in the 70s.
There was a TV show, Spider-Man TV show, with Nicholas Hamilton.
I've never seen it. I've seen pictures of it.
I've got some. Yeah,
what do you think?
They're all right. I mean, it's not a bad suit, even though he's got, like, His eyeballs are silver. But it's not a bad suit. I mean, you take it with a grain of salt and you can have some fun with it.
And then they did the Captain America you talked.
Oh, yeah, those two with Reb Brown and Captain America on a motorcycle with a motorcycle helmet on.
Yeah, well, I saw that. I saw one of them. I guess you said there was two of them?
Yeah, there was two of them. Christopher Lee was in the second one, I think.
Well, I saw one of them. And I remember there was a van. He busted out of the van and the motorcycle and had the helmet.
Yeah, that's it.
And, again, whenever they do these, they always kind of change it. But I thought it was kind of funny. He had the wings painted on the side of the helmet. And I don't know, it was okay, but it was just kind of cheap, cheesy TV.
Well, that's what Marvel, that's what those Marvel movies were. They were cheap and cheesy. Now, after that, again, I'm going to, you know, we're going to be missing something probably in time frame. But after that, the Superman movie, right, the Christopher Reeve one came out, and then that was a real big deal.
Well, that was a... Starlog magazine had a drawing, a Kurt Swan drawing of Superman, and it said that they're planning on doing a major motion picture with Superman. Well, you know, I was a kid, and I believe that when I see it, you know. And they kept saying something about, hopefully they'll make the ass look more like the way Kurt Swan drew it. Well, then later they had a picture of, they cast Christopher Reeve in it. And they had a picture of Christopher Reeve, and he's wearing a button-up shirt, and he was skinny, you know. He's like I was in the 70s. That guy didn't look like Superman, you know, and I just let it go. And then it was some magazine, well, it was tabloid. Somebody had, like, the Star, or, you know, and had a picture of Christopher Reeve in a Superman suit standing on a building pointing straight up in the air.
Yeah, the classic picture.
Yeah, and then they had another one, again, somewhat like that. But it was those two pictures and the Star. And I'm like, wow, that actually, I thought the suit looked great. I liked how the cape, you know, the cape, it looked like the comic book. And it kind of looked like Star Wars. You know?
Yeah.
It had a feel for it. And I thought, well, that's something. And basically the article was talking about David Prowse, who played Darth Vader in the first three Star Wars movies. He was a bodybuilder. And he was the guy that beefed Christopher Reeve up. He was hired as the coach. And they basically had the diet for a week of what to eat. And it was talking about, you know, for lunch you have a salad and this. And certain meals that had a salad and a beer. You know, but it was a heavy protein diet. But they had every day reading it. And I thought, really, but they beefed Christopher Reeve up from the skinny guy like everybody was in the 70s to Superman.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I was looking at some science fiction magazine. It had the same picture of him pointing. And one of the girls in my class saw that. And she went, it doesn't even look like Superman. She was kind of laughing about it. And you always hear people say, yeah, it's like a wimp Superman. Because people always saw Superman as a big, beefy guy. And now Christopher Reeve is Superman. That's how they see it. He was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
But, Superman 2 is one of my favorite movies. And, again, it was a major motion picture.
Well, was it you or somebody was telling me that, and I kind of knew the story, but I don't know exactly the details. Superman 1 and 2 were almost done at the same time, but something happened in the second movie that the director, Richard Donner, quit before finishing it, and they got... Richard Lester, who was the director of the Hard Day's Night movie for the Beatles and the British,
and
American-British director, and How on the War and other movies to come and finish it. And then he's the guy who got the director credit on it, even though he really didn't direct the whole movie. Most of it was already done already.
Well, yeah, I never quite understood that. They filmed the movies simultaneously. What was it, the Salkins? They were the ones that did that movie?
Yeah, Salkins, yeah.
Well, see, there was something else. You ever seen The Three Musketeers?
They did that too.
Yeah.
And the actors got pissed off because they didn't know they were making two movies at the same time.
I don't think they...
And that was Richard Lester, too.
Yeah, it was Richard Lester.
Wow, what's up with him?
Well, no, it's... Originally, I love that movie, Three Musketeers and
Raquel
Four Musketeers.
Raquel Welch, man.
Well, yeah, and Raquel Welch is in it.
And Christopher Lee, I think, was in it, too.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
And that's probably my favorite role Raquel Welch was in. I've always liked Raquel Welch.
Who doesn't?
Well, Raquel Welch is pretty. And there's something about her Well, one, if you're in a movie with dinosaurs and you're in a movie with a miniaturized sub that goes through a human body, you're okay with me.
You can't lose.
But she was so pretty, and there was something about her that just seemed like she was cool. Like, she was a heroine. It's like she was cool. She seemed to understand things other people didn't. And, you know, even though she was a sex symbol and stuff, it seemed like she was more to it. I mean, she wasn't an airhead. She always kind of seemed like a leader when she needed to be and not when she wasn't. But in The Three Musketeers, she played this innocent queen's dressmaker, and she was clumsy. All through the movie, she kept knocking things over and falling on things. And
Yeah, I kind of remember that.
I've got the DVDs. The quality of the DVDs visually is nice, but the sound quality kind of fades in and out, you know.
Weird.
But, they were talking about that originally. I don't think they were planning on making the two movies.
The Supermans.
No, Three Musketeers.
No, I read something that the producers were.
Oh, okay, well.
And they just didn't tell the actors.
Well, I think basically it was 4 hours long, and they had to do something, but they split the movie. I know, what was that one woman, Faye Dunaway? She was upset about it because she's hardly in the first movie. Even though the character is a prominent character, but she's more in the second movie. She said she never would have agreed to it had she known. And
it's funny because Faye Dunaway is in the Superman movies, isn't she? The Christopher Reeve ones.
Is she Miss Tessmacher?
No, that was Valerie Perrine. I could have sworn she was in one of them, but anyway.
Oh well, I don't know.
Okay, anyway, going
anyway,
back to Musketeers.
Richard Lester was the director, and I don't know if he knew what they were going to do, but they split the movie up, and to me, it made sense, because at the very end, D'Artagnan was made a musketeer.
Fourth musketeer,
yeah. And then the next movie was the continuation of it, but to me it was like another movie. But anyway, the Salkins did that, and part of it was money, and trying to figure out how to make money off of it. I guess the actors took them to court over it.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And they did get some money, but they said it was kind of a pittance. It wouldn't be like getting, you know, a second movie.
Yeah, and they were filmed in Britain, too, I think.
I think Spain. I think
Spain?
They were filming Spain.
Spain, okay.
But basically, there's a clause now that they're written in all Hollywood contracts that they call the Salkin Clause.
No kidding.
And the son and the Salkins, he was interviewed, and he brought that up. See how now they have a clause. It's the Salkin Clause. And he kind of laughed, like, you know, I don't know. To me, Hollywood's just a mess anyway, so. But the Superman movies, everybody knew they were filming them together, you know. And the end of the first Superman movie, where he rotated around the Earth and made time go backwards, that was supposed to be the second ending. Because after all the things that happened, destroyed Mount Rushmore, you know, and what those bad guys, the General Zod, and they did, the only way he could fix it was going backwards in time. But the first movie, they had to figure out, they said something at the end that was a big climax, and they couldn't figure out, so they took the ending of that and put it in the first one. Well, that's fine. But I don't know why Richard Donner, he got in a fight with the Salkins or whatever, and it was an argument. I don't remember if he left or was fired. But they had all this footage. Now, what was fantastic was, it was like 3-4 years ago, they released Superman 2 as Richard Donner would have done it, because they had the footage. And they put that out, and it was some film student got permission to do it.
Okay.
And they took at one point, they took a screen test they did of I forgot his name, Christopher Reeve, and Margot Kidder,
Lois Lane.
It's Clark Kent and Lois Lane. He's wearing a tuxedo. He looked a little bit different. But that's in that version, and that was their screen test to see if it worked. And on the video audio commentary, they do talk about it was a screen test. But they took all this footage and made the movie as Richard Donner would have done it.
Richard Donner didn't have anything to
do
with it, though.
But he did the audio commentary with his writer.
Oh.
And which is interesting. They said this is something that they never thought would ever happen. It was amazing to see how he would have done it. Well, I was interested because, again, Superman 2, that was the I never saw the first one until I saw Superman 2. And I love Superman 2.
That's one with the Phantom Zone and the two aliens.
It's where the General Zod and Ursa and...
Sarah Douglas and... I can't remember the actor.
And that guy, Nod.
I can't think of his name right now.
But to me, she was fantastic. General Zod was the ultimate bad guy. It was all fantastic. Well, I found out in the Richard Donner version... the Eiffel Tower part, which amazed me, isn't even in the movie.
That's Richard Lester, then.
Yeah, it was Richard Lester, but to me, it amazed me because it basically showed Superman was all over the world. He wasn't just in Metropolis. So he had terrorists in Paris, and he flew in and took care of it. I just thought that was incredible. I do know that Richard Donner was complaining about that small town. And he says, how they made everybody look like hillbillies and stuff. And he says, that's how, Richard Donner's English, and that's how they see America, in the United States. He says, but it's not that way. But he says he played it down. Well, that's in Richard Donner's version. He filmed that stuff. So I don't know what he was talking about. But it seemed like a lot of the scenes that I really loved in Superman 2 were Richard Lester. And when I was in college, they showed the Superman movie on campus, and I went to see it, and I was really disappointed. I didn't enjoy it as much, and when I watched the Richard Donner version of Superman 2, I realized the reason I loved that movie was the stuff Richard Lester added to it. Mm. Now, I think Richard Lester did call Richard Donner and talk to him.
Yeah, he did.
Which that gives me props for me. Basically, they had a working history with Richard Lester. I guess when The Three Musketeers was coming out, they were looking at Richard Lester, but they were kind of hesitant about it because he hadn't done any movies for a while. He'd done Help, Hard Day's Night, and then...
High Won the War.
Yeah, High Won the War, which didn't do well, I guess.
No.
Then he did some other movies that didn't do so well, and I guess his track record wasn't so good. But
then I think he went to do a lot of TV and stuff like that. I don't think he was involved in Magical Mystery Tour with the Beatles either.
Oh, well, no, and thank God for that.
I don't think he was involved with that.
But
Superman 3 is with the Richard Pryor.
I was so excited about Superman 3 because I love Superman 2, and I thought, well, that'll be neat. And I remember Richard Pryor was on The Tonight Show, and they were asking him at one point, what movie are you excited to see? Superman 2. He couldn't wait. And just like us, he was looking forward to seeing it. So they put him in the third one. Basically, it was kind of a Richard Pryor movie with Superman in it. And to me, it seemed like basically what they did was took the script outline for Superman 2 and just changed the bad guy, and, changed the, instead of Lex Luthor, it was Robert Vaughn. Is that bad businessman? And instead of Superman losing his powers, he's split in two between a good Superman and a bad Superman. Okay, they just kind of took the plot outline, and I didn't like it. The one part in the movie that always stayed with me is when Richard Vaughn's sister was turning into that computer thing. That really freaked me out when the computer took her over and put all those parts on her, interchanged her eyes, and that one really creeped me out. It still creeps me out when I think about it. But the rest of the movie...
You know what super movie Faye Dunaway was in? She was in Supergirl.
Oh, I never saw that one. How was that?
It wasn't that great. I forgot what her name was. But it wasn't... It was okay, but it wasn't anything great.
Well, the Supergirl, I just remember there'd be talk about it. I guess the Salkins were involved in that as well.
Oh, they were? I don't even remember that.
I don't know if they were, and I kept hearing talk. I always got confused. And I don't think it really quite came out. It was supposed to be on the movies, and then it never did.
It played in theaters.
And then I was in the Navy, so I was kind of away from everything. I was overseas. And when I came back, my buddy was talking about it. I guess he was at a convention, and some of the DC guys were talking about it. And I guess it hadn't been released yet. And I said, what do you think? And one of the writers, DC writer, said, I liked it. And everybody laughed. And then one of the editors said, no, people believe when I say it's a really bad movie, and it won't be released. Well, somehow it did come out. I saw part of it on the ship. I thought she looked kind of neat. I liked the costume. And I guess the guy who played Jimmy Olsen was in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I never watched much of the movie. I saw parts. My ties to it was the company we worked for, they hired a creative director who had been the art director for Popeye's Fried Chicken. And he was a really interesting guy. He was certainly a social creature. He was a really good artist. And he was telling me, he brought in he had storyboards, a real thick, you know, booklet of storyboards for Supergirl. I thought they were staggering. And he was telling me about he was on the set. I said, what were you doing there? Well, Popeye's Fried Chicken was one of the sponsors for the movie. And his art director, he was there to make sure that they had the product placement in it. And he was talking about the set, and he even saw the artist work on the storyboards right there on the set. And the drawings were staggering. They kind of reminded me of Ernie Colon, you know. And I thought, okay. But he said he saw him filming and stuff, but the movie seemed to go nowhere. I don't really know too many people have seen that show.
No.
But
anyway, Don, hey, you want to do some more music? You want to play something of your... something that you brought along?
Well, we have a band, but I don't want... I want to introduce them, and I don't have a name for them.
Okay.
So,
We're going to play them, and then when we come back, okay, we'll finish off the show then.
I apologize. This is basically is the guy I met at the karate school. They have a working band. They're a local band, and they are working. And I'll put up a link on the blog in the name. I apologize. I don't remember the name now. But anyway, this is one of their songs.
Losing you.
from musical break.
Well, I do apologize. I don't have the name of the band. Anyway, they're local, and they are working, and you can book them, and I'll have that information up on the site. And if you are in the Tampa Bay area and you would like some entertainment, these guys have been around for quite a while. They do covers, and they do the original material.
Awesome. All right, Helen Slater is Supergirl, so we looked that up.
I never knew that. You know, Helen Slater, everybody knows her from Mad About You and that really good Jack Nicholson movie, As Good As It Gets.
No, that's not Helen Slater.
Oh, that's not?
No.
Oh, never mind. Well, who's Helen Slater then?
Helen Slater, Supergirl. She was in a few other movies.
Oh, who was in Mad About You?
Oh, God, now you're killing me. I can't remember her name. It was Helen Hunt. That's
oh, Helen, okay, never mind. Oh. You're used to me doing this by now. So.
Helen Slater was Supergirl. She's in other movies, too, but I can't think of it. I just remember her as Supergirl.
She did look like Supergirl.
Yeah,
and
she did.
Again,
she
the
good.
Costume and all that, it looked really nice. So.
Yeah, she was all right. I mean, the movie was okay. It wasn't anything great. You know?
I don't really understand what the problems was with the show, because it seemed like it was always, you know, when you did read it, it was something bad, and then when the movie came out, people were bagging on it and stuff. But I saw it, I guess, on the ship's TV, and it was all right, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Now, there was another Superman, the fourth, which I never saw, called the...
Quest for Peace.
Quest for Peace, I never saw.
Well, we just moved here to the Tampa Bay area, my wife and I, and again, huge Christopher Reeve Superman fan. And it's like any time, you're always wanting to catch lightning in the bottle again. You're hoping that it'll be another good movie. And I was kind of excited that, you know, Christopher Reeve was Superman again, and they brought back the guy who played Lex Luthor.
Gene Hackman.
Yeah, Gene. I was going to say Gene Wilder.
No.
But they were making a big deal about he was back in it. And the St. Petersburg Times wrote a whole write-up about it. They were real critical about Superman 3. They were talking about it was a plus with the Lex Luthor character. But I couldn't really quite get it if the guy thought the movie was good or not. And basically saying, well, what I like about this is they're back and there can be another movie. And my question was, is this any good? This place I worked at, this one guy there had a bunch of those 7-Eleven Superman Slurpee cups. And I saw, have you seen it? No. I wonder if it's any good. I don't know. You know, but when it came out on videotape, I rented the movie. And, yeah, I don't know. It wasn't real good. Superman didn't quite seem so super. And there was a nuclear man in it, which I guess Lex Luthor created.
Oh, God, now I remember, yeah.
Yeah, okay, there you go. I mean,
I tried to forget about
somebody
that.
Somebody said that basically Christopher Reeve came to him with the idea. It was kind of driven by his idea. But there was one point where I guess Superman met with the United Nations and talked about what he's going to do to straighten the world out. Well, his heart was in the right place, I guess, but it just didn't, I don't know. Kind of a slaggy movie for me, and I guess that kind of ended the whole franchise thing there. But
yeah, it sure did for a while anyway.
Yeah, but yeah, it's.
I guess before that was one that I saw in the theaters, and at the time I still it's okay. Swamp Thing. So I don't know. He got his movie, but I guess he was like real popular. I think this was before Alan Moore got on the book.
Oh yeah, this is it was even before Marty Pascal and Thomas Yates did the saga of the Swamp Thing.
Yeah, the saga. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just the old Len Wein, Bernie Wrightson comics, which
is fine. But
oh, they were fantastic, but.
But yeah. Wes Craven got a hold of this.
Was that Wes Craven?
Yeah, it was Wes Craven.
Well, that was my sophomore year in college, and I remember it came out, and I was kind of surprised. And one of my friends did go see it, and he said, I just kind of want to go see some mindless entertainment. And again, he was a comic book guy like we are, so he thought he'd see it. He said the Swamp Thing monster, you know, the creature, was actually pretty good. Adrian.
Except you could see, like, his mouth underneath the suit.
Oh, could
suit.
You?
Yeah.
Adrian Barbeau was in it?
Yes, she was good in it.
But,
she looked good.
I think I've seen part of the movie on HBO or something.
There was two of them.
But, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the second one, the costume was a little better than
the first one, my friend was complaining about, at one point, I guess there was another monster that came up. It was the plot line. He says, basically they spent all their money and special effects on a swamp thing, and when the other guy came out, it looked like half animal, half man. It was really stupid.
It's Wes Craven. It was low budget.
People liked it.
Yeah, it did okay. It did good enough to have a sequel.
I never knew it had a second. Well, there was a TV series in the late 80s.
Yeah, I think.
And I understand it was in syndication.
Didn't watch it.
I never saw it, but there was a commercial with a swamp thing talking to the audience. And it was, I guess, really heavy environmental. The commercial was for, it wasn't for the Swamp Thing TV show. It was for an environmental agency or something. But it was a pretty strong commercial, and it seemed like a lot of people watched the syndicated show. I think it was this is after the Alan Moore comic series.
Okay.
So, Watchmen, I guess this is probably 89.
Okay.
I don't know how long the series ran, but it seemed popular. I know people watched it and talked about it.
I do not remember that at all.
Yeah, but that came up.
It was during my lost decade, maybe. I don't remember it. And I had forgotten about this movie, but I think in 89, they actually did a Punisher movie with Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, I remember that.
I forgot about that one. I don't think I saw that one either.
I've heard... To me, the Punisher is a bad guy in the Spider-Man comics that Ross Andrew drew.
Yeah, sure.
And I was kind of excited when Frank Miller was doing Daredevil, and the Punisher was in that. He was put in prison. I thought, well, that's kind of neat. And that's as far. The Punisher got to be a lot of people's favorite character. I guess he's got several books from Marvel.
Sure, yeah.
He's a major player. But I do know there was a Punisher movie came out with Dolph Lundgren. I don't think he wore the costume. I think he's wearing a leather jacket or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know. It's one of those movies I think people complain, but there's been several Punisher movies.
Yeah, there's one with Travolta was in it. Not as a Punisher, but as another character or whatever. And then there was there was one I think that was partially filmed here. I think. I could be wrong.
I think you are right.
But later on in the year the Biggie came out, the second incarnation of Batman movie, the Tim Burton Batman.
Yeah.
That was like the big...
Well, before that, remember there was The Spirit with Sam
Well, that,
Jones.
Yeah, you're right, the TV Spirit. Yeah, which didn't do... I remember watching, and it didn't like do anything. But when I rewatched it on a bootleg VHS that I got someplace, it wasn't half bad. Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, is the Spirit in there.
Yeah, it was on AMC, or ABC.
Yeah, it was on ABC, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
see, I remember, I never saw the show, I remember the commercial for it, and when I saw it, it's they're doing like a Adam West Batman again. It looks silly to me.
Yeah.
And part of the problem with the Spirit, you know, he had gloves and he had a mask, and which Will Eisner added to it. But that was never really quite the character. The character was basically a guy that was trying to change things and do right. And when you saw the Sam Jones things, he looked like a comic book superhero. I guess he had a light blue mask, and the mask was always kind of incidental, you know. But in that one, it looked kind of goofy and this and that. And I've heard people complain about it since. But no, there was another TV adaptation of a comic book superhero at that time too.
In the 80s?
Yeah, the late 80s.
Well, there was the Flash TV show, but I think that was in the 90s, wasn't it?
No, that was in 88 or 89.
The Flash TV show? Where it was Flash with a puffy suit?
Yeah, well, it was like Batman. The same people that did the...
Okay, it was after Batman, that's
yeah.
It would have been in the 90s.
It was,
was
89. 89.
Was it 89? Okay, yeah. I wasn't sure. Alright.
Yeah, what was it? John Wesley Dodd, I think?
Wesley Shipp or something.
Yeah, my wife watched the pilot to it. I watched parts of it, but she goes, honey, this is good. She was really enjoying it. And I watched it. Howard Chaykin was
involved in it.
He was a writer or kind of a director to it, some type of creative director, writing director. I know when Walt Simonson wrote and drew the Fantastic Four, and one issue he dedicated to Howard Chaykin. He said, the doctor to the Flash, you know. But, again, it was I was over at some friend's house that had teenage boys, and they were watching it. I said, do you watch that? Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I remember my wife watched the pilot, and I watched parts of it. every once in a while, somehow I'd catch part of the show on TV. I never watched one straight through.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard interviews later with people involved in the show, and they said that, I guess, Chaykin had a lot of control at the beginning, and he started losing at the end, and, you know, ratings went down.
Sure, yeah, they took it away from him.
But he said part of the problem was the Flash didn't have that great of a rogues gallery. Well, I don't know exactly what context he's talking about. I thought the Flash had some of the greatest rogues gallery, you know.
Not in that show, apparently.
Well, I guess maybe, well, they were kind of goofy, but...
Know, the Freeze guy. And
I love that. Captain Cold?
Captain Cold,
I loved
yeah.
him. Heat, what was it? Heat Wave?
Yeah, Heat Wave.
The Trickster? The Weather yeah. Wizard? I mean, come on, Gorilla Grodd? Yeah, they were great, but I guess they were real comic book stuff that I like, and maybe it wouldn't translate to a show that they were trying to do like The Flash.
Right, right. Yeah.
But, listen, that Rogues Gallery is so great that they went over to Blue Devil. So, I don't know, but, I mean, maybe if you're trying to do a drama like that was, but it was a popular show that people watched.
And then, yeah, like I said before, later that year, Batman, which was like another big, huge, mega, you know, Jack Nicholson, the whole thing. That's basically really kick-started the comics industry again, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I was running a comic shop then, and like people started coming in like off the street you never ever saw before, like buying Batman books and going crazy and speculating and all that great stuff.
Well, like I said, the comics were going pretty well, and they were starting to build up steam. But yeah, I remember when that movie was coming out, I was interested because they talked about doing it, and they talked about they were going to play it grim and gritty. You know, this is after Dark Knight, the Frank Miller stuff
yeah.
came out. And I thought, well, that's good. And they were always talking about Jack Nicholson playing the Joker, which I thought would have been awesome. And I talked to people at work, you know, I was really excited about it. And the movie's starting to happen. I was interested, but not quite as interested. But people were upset about Michael Keaton was playing Batman. I didn't really care. I remember in the stores sometimes people complain, and Pat would say they could get Pee Wee Herman to play the character because he's wearing body armor.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then people complain about the body armor. Well, it could still be okay. And it was before, right when the movie started to come out, I lost all interest. When I saw the Comic Journal did a whole issue talking about more Bat Guano, and they had pictures of Batman toys that you'd be seeing at comic stores. And I guess one store owner in Dallas, I think it was Buddy Saunders, was basically telling people he was going to order Batman stuff to sell toys and all that. But he was going to order more of the 60s Batman stuff, you know, and try to steer people away from the regular Michael Keaton movie stuff. But what got me was the news were showing stuff, and they had all these people dressed up like Batman standing in line to see the show and all that. And it was just a lot of hype, and I never went to see the Batman show.
Never saw it in theaters, huh?
No, never, none of them. I remember the IT, the director of the IT department, wore a black Batman shirt every day to work, you know. And I always referred to him. I said, "You talking about the guy with the Batman shirt?" "Oh, yeah," and they say his name. Okay. I mean, it was pretty awesome, you know, but every day he wore a black Batman shirt.
Those were the days.
But that kind of stuff was happening all the time. There was people at work that just worshipped that, you know. I don't know, I just lost interest. I didn't want to see it. And then they had a Diet Coke commercial, you know, with the guy that playing Alfred basically, and they were showing Batman in the Batmobile, and I got a little interested in it. So somebody lent me the videotape and I watched it. And I was working nights at the time. I got off work and I was playing it, and I had the TV down low so nobody could hear it. And then my wife wakes up, comes in, so I turned the sound on. And my wife made a comment, "That movie's a lot different with the sound. You know, it really relied on the sound. I guess like Star Wars would."
And the Three Stooges.
Yeah. But I didn't really enjoy it very much. Michael Keaton couldn't hardly even move his neck. He just, when he looked up, he had to lift his whole body and look up. And somebody told me they saw the movie, and their problem was every time he'd pull out a gadget and use it, like, you know, grappling or whatever, grappling hook, He says the problem he had with it was they didn't show it. They just immediately up and pew, they didn't show how it worked or anything. I thought, well, that's a little meticulous.
Yeah.
But when I was watching the film, I kind of see what he meant. It's like they'd show it for a second, and it would go, and I thought, I don't know. It didn't sit well with me, but I mean, that's fine. I seem like I'm the only person that felt that way. I saw the second one on TV with Catwoman and stuff, and that one, it was better. I like how they laid out some of Gotham City. I liked how they play. I mean, I didn't love it, but it seemed like it was a better movie.
Right.
And well,
Danny DeVito as the Penguin, who looked like Lon Chaney in London After Midnight or something.
Well, and some of it was kind of neat. Like I said, I watched it on the TV, and it was. Oh, that's not too bad. I liked how they kind of redesigned the costume for Batman.
By the time they got to Batman and Robin with George Clooney, then you really started to jump the shark or whatever they call it.
One thing I do like about those is that Batman animated series came out because of that. And basically, when they were working on the cartoon, that's when the second Batman movie came out, and they basically, Warner's, had them take all the character designs to Tim Burton to approve. And I guess they wanted to make the Penguin more like he was in the comic books, and the studio insisted that he make it like the Danny DeVito type Penguin that lived in the sewers and everything. And they were saying that they'd take the stuff to Burton, and since Burton had an animation background, he said, oh yeah, this is fine, this is okay, you know. But if it wasn't for that cartoon that I dearly love never would have came out.
Yeah, that is true, and Batman's been in cartoon form ever since,
right.
I guess, in some form.
Even though I didn't care for the movies, I'm thankful for what that caused. The third movie, I said I haven't seen any of those in theater, but that's not true.
There was a Val Kilmer one, too.
Yeah, that's the one I saw. The reason why was my wife and my daughter, for some odd reason, like Jim Carrey. I was never a Jim Carrey fan. But anyway, it was at the Dollar Movies. We used to have those up in Largo. So they wanted to see Batman 3, so we went. And it was okay. You know, there were some neat elements to it. When the fourth one came out, you couldn't go anywhere without seeing posters of Arnold Schwarzenegger and...
Mr. Freeze.
Was Uma Thurman in that movie?
She was Poison Ivy in one of them. I don't know if it was that one or the one with Val Kilmer. I think it was a George Clooney one.
I think it was a George
Robin.
Clooney.
And it had like Batgirl and Robin and all that crap.
My daughter was, I guess, five years old, and I babysat for one of my friends that had a boy and a girl about the same age, and they brought that Batman and Robin, the fourth one.
Yeah, right.
They had it on videotape, and they brought it in, and you know, I put it in, and they watched it. And I don't know, it seemed like they were trying to make it kind of like the Tim Burton one and kind of like the Adam West one, because
yeah,
the music was going on and they're running. At one point, Mr. Freeze froze the place and they had these ice skates that popped out of the bottom of their feet, and they were kind of acting over the top and all that. But I thought, well, that's kind of... But again, these five-year-old kids loved it, you know. Yeah. My daughter, not so much, but the other two liked it, and that's okay.
Now, here's one that I think that you liked from 91, I think, The Rocketeer.
Oh, I have that. That's one of my... When that movie came out, I was really surprised because I was reading that Dave Stevens thought it'd be nice to have a movie. And the funny thing was, Marvel Comics was taking Dave Stevens to court. Because I guess they had a character called The Rocketeer.
They did?
Yeah, and in the mid-80s, they were taking him to court, and basically Dave Stevens was using all of his money for lawyers to defend himself. And I heard about this in 86, and they said he'd go to court with it, and Marvel said, we got the lawyers that say we need more time to prepare. And so they'd cancel it, you know, postpone it, and then Dave Stevens would have to gather up more money, get a lawyer, and go back in there.
I didn't know any of this.
But they were tying him up in court for a long time. And the big joke was that Marvel was doing that, trying to mess around with him about the name Rocketeer. And then Disney was the one that did the movie. And they said it was a joke because Marvel was using all their clout and muscle to, you know, belittle a little man. And then Disney, a bigger organization, stepped in and Marvel stopped.
And now Marvel is Disney.
Yeah, Marvel is Disney. But I don't know. Again, comic book movies, I wasn't sure how that was going to come out. I really liked the comic strip that Dave Stevens did.
Oh, is it classic?
Oh, yeah, and that's an understatement. It's something else. The first storyline, you know, it was basically, I guess, it equated to 5 issues. They made a fantastic graphic novel for it.
And it was a backup feature, remember, in Star Slayer or whatever
it
was called.
Yeah, well, it's
the Mike Grell thing.
It switched around. It was in that, and then it was in Pacific Presents for 2 issues.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And then Eclipse Comics put out the last issue. But yeah, it's fantastic. He's basically, I never really said the name, but it was Doc Savage is the reason. The person had the jetpack, and he was trying to get it back.
Well, there was an Old Republic serial called King of the Rocket Man, and the Rocketeer looked pretty close to the King of the Rocket Man. I don't know if there was ever a lawsuit behind that, but it was definitely the jetpack, the helmet, the whole 9 yards. But the Rocketeer rules, though, so I got no.
Oh yeah, I love that.
I have a problem with the Rocketeer. I do have a problem with the Captain America from '91, though. I don't think you saw that one, did
no.
you?
No. Well, one thing about the Rocketeer, my friend went to see that at the theaters, and he was so delighted. He says, "I got to tell you, you've got to see that. I just saw it." And he says, "It looks like it. The whole spirit of the comic strip, it's all there." And they were advertising on TV, you know, and it looked kind of dorky, parts of it. And it was at the Dollar Movies. I wanted to see it. And my wife's friend was coming with us, and she did not want to see it. And Myrna said, "Why?" "Well, it just looks bad." "Well, I want to see it." So she ended up going. And when it's finished, she goes, "Oh, that's good." It was great. I loved it. Even though they changed some of the elements in it, it made sense. I've got it on DVD. I pop it in and watch it all the time. I will say that is my favorite comic book adaptation ever. Mm-hmm. You know,
and it had Jennifer Connelly in it, so there you go.
Yeah, well, that was the other thing. People were kind of like, "Well, Betty Page isn't in it." I guess they call her Jenny because
They call her Jenny. Yeah,
but hey, it
Betty
could,
Page didn't was alive, and I think she didn't want any involvement.
I think part of it was Disney. I think Disney was the one that said, "I don't know if she was a
pin-up."
Oh,
because of the softcore.
But it didn't take away from it. You know, the other girl was fine. It still had that same spirit.
Yeah,
it was just, and Timothy Dalton was in it. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Nazis, you name it. It was great.
And speaking of Nazis, that Captain America I was alluding to, man, what a POS that was. They had they tried to give Captain America, you didn't see it, right? They gave him a Batman kind of like, looked like body armor, but it looked like muscles. But they made the Red Skull Italian instead of German. So
I wonder why.
I mean, were they going to be offending Nazis? I don't know, you know? I mean,
Italy sided with Germany in the beginning of the war.
Yeah, they were the Mussolini and all that, but it was just like, once again, stop rewriting the characters, Hollywood.
Was it an American production?
I think it was those guys, Golden Globus, Malcolm Golden, and they did some cheeseball movies in the. They were Canon Films. Remember Canon Films? They were like, those guys started out with Corman. Of course, every B-movie person started out with Roger Corman. And then they formed Canon Films, and, you know, that was one of the... I forgot what the other ones were. They were pretty popular in the 80s. I'm sure they made a lot of money. They were B-movie operation. That's fine. I love them, you know. But, yeah, they did the Cap. And then, once again, they messed that one up. So, but then even worse than that, believe it or not, the one that they never even... released, which I actually got a nice copy of, the Roger Corman Fantastic Four. You ever see that bad boy?
No, but that's a strange one there, because this is a period where all the comic stores in this area kind of dried up. I don't know. There was about a year and a half, where the only time I could get anything is when I went on vacation and went to another state. I was completely out of the loop on all this stuff. And then whenever I'd pick up the Comic Scene magazine, they'd allude to that movie. I said, "Well, that is a Fantastic Four movie. I never heard of this." And then they had pictures, color pictures in one of them, and I thought, you've got to be kidding me. I guess they used the reversed Fantastic Four costumes, the John Byrne design, where they had the white gloves and the dark blue suits. And I went, okay, they were trying to follow the current continuity. But then I saw pictures of the guy that played Reed Richards, and I don't know, it just looked, well, it looked kind of goofy, I hate to say it. But there
I've got a copy here, I'll loan it to you.
Well, there was a comic store in the early 90s. They had a TV at the counter, and they always had a plan, I guess, so the people that worked there could see it, but, you know, the customer could see it when you walked out. And they had organ music, like horror movie organ music. Yeah. And every time they, I guess it was Dr. Doom's Castle, whenever they show you hear the organ music and you know, the lightning bolts coming down like an old Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And I said, what is this? And then the screen would kind of change from the right to the left and it would show, I don't know, it looked like a bad Saturday afternoon kids show or something.
Which is perfectly fine, except in 1991 or 94, ain't working.
But I, like I said, that's I kept thinking, when did this movie ever come out?
It didn't.
But I see copies around.
That's because it never was shown theatrically. It was never released on video, but bootleg surfaced through copies of copies of copies. And then I think finally it's come out, and I think on the Blu-ray of the second brand new Fantastic Four movie, I think. That's where it came.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's buried. It's one of the extras on there because, you know, Blu-ray holds mega.
That's actually really cool. You know.
Yeah.
Well, it must be interest because it keeps popping up, and
so it's infamous, basically.
And you know, like I said, they had pictures of it and some magazine color pictures, and even though I thought it was goofy, I said, "Well, it's still they put it out." It seemed like they were trying to stay true to the comic book in a way.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, they were. I mean, the other cheesy thing was they took, when the Human Torch would fly, it looked like they took reanimated like flying scenes from some old comic animated movie. I don't know if they took Superman, you know, cells and recolored. They did something to it. I can't remember what cartoon it was, but they basically recycled old cartoons and painted the character that was flying to look like a Human Torch. That was just like, wow.
That's hilarious.
Wow, we still got a few to go here. The Crow. You ever see that one?
Yeah, well, The Crow, that was a big thing. Brandon Lee was Bruce Lee's son, and they were making a big deal about the movie, and they were filming it, and then he died. And people at work, the big thing was, they finished the movie. What they did is got a stunt double, and they took Brandon Lee's face out of old movies he shot. He did a Showdown in Little Tokyo. He did another movie, I think, called Rapid Fire. And he did I never seen it, but it was a Kung Fu, David Carradine Kung Fu TV special. Mm-hmm. And I guess he played David Carradine's grandfather or something, or young David Carradine. I'm not really sure exactly, but they took footage from those movies and used Photoshop and put his head over the stunt double.
Oh, okay.
And that was the first thing. People were amazed by that. And the fun thing was, is at work, we were getting all these scenes because we used Photoshop, and we were getting, like, real estate, you know, agents and stuff, and could you make this agent look 6 pounds lighter? Could you make this person look, you know, 8 years younger? We'd have to contact them. No, we can't do that. Well, they put Brandon Lee's head on the Crow. Well, that was kind of amazing, but, you know, that was the film crew that's what they did, and even though they used Photoshop, they had other things, but, yeah, we were getting a lot of stuff like that. But guys I work with, and guys I know to this day, they think that movie is the greatest. It's like, I think Dallas liked it. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I rented it just because of all the... No, somebody lent me the movie. They'd bought it. But, I mean, it was one of those movies where they're just close to. They kind of live through it. And I watched it, and my attitude was, what's the point of this?
It was based on the comic book. You know, it's like a real kind of like...
James O'Barr did that.
Yeah, it was just like, you know, revenge after the death of his girlfriend. It was like a revenge thing. It was very, music-oriented, I guess. You know, it had dark... The beginning of, like, you know, real dark, not the beginning of, but turn of the century or whatever, you know, dark super. Well, it was actually 94.
Well, no, it was going with the time, and it's what musical styles and stuff. I understand why some people liked it. I just wasn't one of those people. I wasn't even aware of the comic. I was surprised it was a comic, and
Goth, I think, is the word.
Yeah, well, it was the beginning of Goth.
Which I'm thinking was
But, you know, the people I know that liked the movie weren't Goth people. You know, they right. did like, you know, some of the heavy metal acts from the 80s and early 90s, but they, but you know, they related to it. There was an article about the movie coming out, and, you know, about the death of Brandon Lee, and James O'Barr was talking that basically when he did that comic, he just got out of the Marines. And his girlfriend died, and that was mm-hmm. how he felt. Mm-hmm. And but I was kind of amazed that I wasn't ever aware of that comic at all. Kitchen Sink put it on, and reading okay. about it after Kitchen Sink lost his company, they were talking about you know, all the Dennis Kitchen was a great publisher. I love the work he put out, and he didn't seem to just put out stuff he liked. You know, they reprinted, you know, I think they reprinted some Flash Gordon strips. I know that they were doing Alley-Oop. They did a bunch of stuff, Nancy, that kind of stuff. Besides all the undergrounds, they did Xenozoic Tales, you know, the Cadillacs
yeah,
and Dinosaurs.
Yeah, sure, with Mark Schultz, yeah.
But, I mean, he took chances. He did the Omaha the Cat Dancer, which is one of my favorite series. But he took chances. And they said that he hated publishing The Crow. He didn't like the comic. He hated the fact he published it, but it sold well, it made yeah. money, and, yeah. you know, again, he was the type of publisher, he would put things out because they needed to be out, but, I don't know, The Crow was one a lot of people liked, but I wasn't one of them. Mm. But you were, I see.
Yeah, I seem to remember, like, being, I was working at the comic shop, and that book was getting real popular. I remember being reprinted a lot, and the first issues getting real valuable. So when the reprints came out, I just remember, you know, reading them, and I kind of like the sketchy artwork, and you know, the revenge storyline was kind of interesting. You know, I mean, I kind of liked it.
Well, I would have I did what I've seen in the trade magazines. I did like the artwork. If I had seen it on a rack, I imagine I would have bought it.
Yeah,
because he had a bit of a manga style to it.
Somewhat.
You know, which at the time, that was kind of unheard of.
That was the beginning of it,
yeah.
I think, wasn't it? Yeah.
And it looked like it was good. And you're right, it had a sketchy style. Even though he had a manga type feel to it, it was his own work. And it looked pretty strong. But, again, I never really saw him until after the movie came out. And that's when I saw, I guess yeah. it was a trade. How many issues? Do you know how many issues it ran?
If I remember correctly, the first series of The Crow, four maybe?
Okay.
I remember there being four, and then I think there was Crow, there was other things that came out afterwards.
Yeah, well, I still see stuff all the time about The Crow. A lot of people loved it, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And then another one I didn't see, Spawn.
Yeah, I never saw.
Yeah.
Well, the Spawn was one of the... When Image Comics came out, Todd McFarlane, you know, all these guys from Marvel came over and was doing stuff. And Todd McFarlane had said, are any of you guys doing an ongoing series? They were always, you know, short miniseries. And he said, well, he felt for Image to really make it, they needed an ongoing series, so he did Spawn. My nephew got the first issue of it. I picked it up and tried to read it, and it was nice looking. Tom Warzenkowski did the lettering, and Steve Olaf did the coloring. And it was on slick paper, and the coloring was just staggering. But, you know, and it was kind of neat. The first issue came with a set of, four or eight cards, you know, trading
Spawned?
Cards. Yeah, inside it. You know, they were just pages, but
God,
they were cards.
Yeah, I guess.
But my nephew was trying to find a comic, and I said, well, you like this kind of stuff. He liked the Terminator. He liked Predator. All the stuff Dark Horse is putting out. He liked cards. And I said, well, you know, this one looks like the kind of stuff you like. And I think it was $1.95. It was a staggering looking, and it had cards. He decided to get it. I picked it up and kind of thumbed through it. I was going to read it, and I lost interest real quick.
Yeah.
What was it? Every once in a while somebody have one, and I do the same thing. I pick it up and kind of thumb through it. It was always nice looking.
Spawn?
Yeah, I just never...
I was never a McFarlane fan, so...
Well, I was just never interested in reading it, I guess. And then when the movie was coming out, some people at work were talking. They were excited about the, again, special effects. And they kept talking about how, I guess, they animated the cape. And I've never seen the trailers much. And they were always surprised I wasn't going to go see it. Well, I had no interest. But they did. And they said, well, I want to see it with the special effects. Oh, okay. Again, one friend of mine kept talking about some actor played a clown, I guess, which is in the comic strip.
Yeah, yeah, John Leguizamo.
Oh, that. Well, he wanted to see it for that. And I'm not familiar with the series, so I can't talk about it. But you know, even a good friend of mine from college, Britt, I think he talked about he wanted to see it for the special effects. Well, they made a couple movies, right?
Yep.
And then an animated series on HBO.
Yeah.
And one of the guys at the school was asking me. He says, "Well, do you draw like Spawn?" No. They kept talking, but he knew it from the comic, I guess, the cartoon series on HBO. Eric Rendamsky did it. He was one of the Batman animated guys. He went over and did that. But I've never seen the cartoon.
No. I saw a little bit of one once.
And well, like I said, he was a popular character. Rook has a bunch of the Spawn figures in his garage. Which,
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But I asked him, I said,
that would be the age group, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, those Spawn action figures with all those Ghost Rider action figures he has, it looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I asked him, I said, do you read the comic? No. And I said something because he just liked the figures. Well, again, they go right with the Ghost Rider stuff, but he's not. I couldn't really talk about. They've made two movies and I guess a popular animated series.
Yeah, and the comic book's still getting published, I think.
Really? I know he stopped drawing it and they got that Capullo.
Yeah, but Capullo does Batman now. I don't know who's drawing it now. But
have you seen it? The Spawn?
Not lately, no. Yeah. I don't think Pat carries it. I think it's still being published. I mean, I think. I haven't seen it in a while, so I can't.
Well, yeah, I know people like it. James, yeah. The guy we work with,
yeah,
he always
yeah.
jokes about coming on the show. He says, I'll come on the show when you guys talk about Spawn. Well, I said, well, that would be fine, but it'd be a solo show because I don't, you know, I guess he should be on now to talk about it.
Okay, the last one, I'm thinking maybe we should, like, do this last one and then maybe when, like, we do the 2000, maybe get our...
That would be a better idea.
Our other partners on in here because they're probably like, you know, would want to talk about that stuff.
They'd
too.
Be better at it too.
I guess the last one from the 90s, from the 20th century. Wow, Blade. You ever see those?
I've seen part of it. I wasn't aware. I never read the Dracula series from Marvel.
I did. It was cool.
Well, he was. Dracula was in Doctor Strange in the 80s, and that Doctor Strange comic book in the early 80s. To me, it was just magic. You know, Michael Golden worked on it. Paul Smith worked on it. And sometimes they were just one-shot stories. I remember Carl Potts did a really fantastic story.
Yeah.
Tony Salmons drew one. But it was just always one-shot stories that were just fantastic. But they did, Steve Laiolola did about three issues where he was fighting Dracula. And Blade was in it. I didn't realize that was the movie character. One, I love Wesley Snipes.
He's in jail now.
Yeah, well, hey, you know.
You gotta pay those taxes, man.
Well, he's still awesome.
He is. He's cool, yeah.
Demolition Man.
Yeah.
No problem with that.
He's cool.
And my favorite movie he's in, which is odd, is Major League, where Charlie Sheen.
Oh, yeah. That was a funny movie.
You know,
the
thing about Wesley Snipes, he just seems cool, but it's how he moves. You know, he's a martial artist and stuff, but in that movie, he had me convinced he was a professional baseball player.
Yeah.
You know, how he's stealing bases and running. And whenever I make that comment, my wife said, honey, he's an actor. Well, yeah, I know. He's got to convince you, but he really convinced you. But,
he's an actor.
Well, yeah. And but I'm sorry for all the other troubles, but.
Yeah.
No, Blade, I was at a friend's house when one of them starts where they're in a disco and blood starts coming through the sprinkler system.
Yeah, right.
Well, my wife, as soon as she starts seeing blood, she starts to pass out and get sick. And that happened. My friend saw that and immediately turned the channel.
No Dracula movies for me.
Yeah, well, she just, you know, she just kind of collapses. I'm sure if she had to see it, she would. But entertaining
it's
movie.
It's not a popular. Yeah. It's not a fun thing for her to.
Yeah,
watch.
It's not. So I've never really seen him. I hear people love him.
I liked him.
He's done two, I think.
Yeah, I think there was three actually, but I liked him. I thought he was good.
People love him, and like I said, I do like Wesley Snipes. But it was the Marvel Comics character.
Yeah, they tweaked it. And he had extra other characters with him fighting all the vampires. But the vampires looked good, and for what it was, I mean, I saw it with people who didn't know who the character was. Not that he was a major character or anything like that, but you know, people took it for what it was. It wasn't like you're tampering with Captain America or Superman or Batman or whatever. It was a minor character. They kind of updated to the modern times, and for what they did, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, well, I mean. I think what the decisions they made, it looked like the right one. It didn't really take away from it and kind of made him a little more awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
But one thing you're leaving out, I guess we should talk about before this is over, is the Dick Tracy, the Warren...
That's right, I forgot about that thing because I never saw it. And
that was in 1990 as well,
that
wasn't
was
it?
That was earlier.
89?
91, 92 maybe.
Okay. Yeah, it's...
That was a real big... That was after Batman. They were trying to capture the Batman thing.
Well, it was the next year. And I remember McDonald's sponsored it, and the commercials they showed for that was constant. And I got to where I hated it before the movie ever came out. And Kyle Baker did the adaptation for it. I remember I was at the Epcot Center that summer, and they were selling the Kyle Baker adaptation in all the Disney stores in the parks. They were really pushing it, and I don't know. To me, the movie looked kind of two-dimensional and stupid with all the gaudy. I like it when they make it look like a comic book, you know, but I don't know, that one just looked too, and I got sick and tired of all the commercials and showing, you know, Dustin Hoffman and all these characters dressed
Madonna
up.
Madonna and Warren Beatty and all that,
yeah. Yeah, well, Madonna put out a CD called Hello, I'm Breathless, which is, I guess, the music from that.
Oh, is it?
But,
okay.
But I remember a guy I worked with says, what are you talking about? I'm looking forward to Dick Tracy. Oh, okay. I never went to see it. It was on a movie channel one time. I watched it, and I didn't care for it, honestly.
No, they tried real hard to be cool and hip and have a lot of famous people in it. I think Al Pacino was in it. And
well, yeah, it was Dustin Hoffman, Al Pacino, a lot
Hoffman
of big-name actors.
Yeah,
you know.
Everybody was in it, but it was just like... Warren Beatty, he was like directing it, and he was hyping it, and it was just like, nah, it's all right.
Well, it's like when a TV show was on for a real long time, and all of a sudden...
Do you remember that Dick Tracy cartoon?
I don't remember
in the 60s?
But I've seen it on demand. My daughter...
Yeah, that's right, they do have it on demand.
I was never aware of it. It's kind of neat, I thought.
It's kind of neat, but it's also kind of like... It's like Dick Tracy doesn't do anything. All he does is call his pals, and some of them are like, you know, kind of, I mean, nowadays they would consider them maybe like stereotyping or whatever, but Joe Jitsu and the Bulldog, I forgot what his name is, Sherlock Hemlock. And
yeah, you're right, he's more like a coordinator.
Yeah, he's just like, you see the traffic and like, the car going through it, and then it's like, Sherlock Holmes calling Joe Jitsu, we need you to go over there. And it's like, well, Dick, why don't you go out and fight crime or whatever, you know. No, yeah. I got my guys doing it.
Yeah, I've never seen that except on demand.
I guess that was
from the 50s?
60s.
Oh, 60s. I never saw it. I used to watch it in the early 70s on that Archie's TV Funnies.
They used to play Dick Tracy on there?
Yeah. It was him and Sam and had the little flying trash cans they were always in.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the one most of us liked on that.
Yeah.
But, the show itself... the one thing that was kind of nice was Gladstone, who did all the Karl Barks.
That's right, they were reprinting those.
Yeah, they reprinted them in a comic book format.
Yeah, they sure did. Yeah.
And they said that Disney was trying to get the rights to it, but I guess they like Gladstone.
I remember, working at a comic shop. There was the same comic shop. There was a lady that used to come in every month. All she did was buy the was it Blackthorn? Was it Dick Tracy reprints? That's all she ever got.
Oh well, these were color comic books. It was by Gladstone.
Oh no, there was black and white. The strips by I think Blackthorn.
It might have been Blackthorn.
Some company like that. They would just cut them up and put them up. I think they would actually turn them into a. I don't know. I just I would sell them. I didn't read.
Well, that's what Gladstone did. I've still got maybe six of them, but that's what they do is they blow some of the panels up and make it into a comic book page. Yeah. But they did a really nice job, and it was a color comic, and they were actually pretty nice looking.
Okay.
But they ran, I don't know how long. I bought maybe five, six of them and stopped. But, supposedly Warren Beatty still has the rights to it.
Oh, really?
He won't let it go. I've heard some of it was spite. I guess he's wanting to do another one, another movie. And I guess he felt like he deserved more than what the movie did, and he was upset about it, and he won't release it. I don't know quite so much.
Well, with strip characters, of course, you mentioned Popeye, and then there was a little Orphan Annie on the, but it was based on the music.
The Broadway
more than
play.
Anything else, yeah, again. Pass.
I saw that. Well, I went to see it. Carol Burnett plays the, I guess, the bad orphanage lady. I went to see it. I never saw the musical.
See, I would have seen it if everybody had white eyeballs, because that would have been really freaky, but they had normal eyeballs, so it was just like, no, it's not the same
thing. Well, you know, speaking of Carol Burnett, on her, she used to have that variety show, they had a thing about a big musical. It was comic strips. And they had Alley-Oop, you know, and there was, I think, Raquel Welch, going back to Raquel Welch, I think she was the guest. But they came out and they were singing an Alley-Oop song from the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And they had all the cavemen. I'd heard the name, but I didn't know Alley-Oop was a comic strip about cavemen. It was in the Texas newspaper my grandparents got, but not in Oklahoma City. So to me, it was a thrill when I go back home and I could read it. It was the Dave Growy stuff.
Right.
But they had Little Orphan Annie. And she did have the white eye patches on.
Yeah, man.
And they had the dog out there, and she had a beach ball singing a song. And I thought, how did they do her eyes? Because I was always asking my dad, why doesn't she have eyeballs? And Dad said, it's just the way the artist draws it. But her and Daddy Warbucks and Pinjab, they all had those white eyeballs.
Yeah, like they were all blind or something.
But I can she see? It's just how the artist does it. And I'd read the strip trying to figure it out. And
it's disturbing.
Well, then they even had at one point, because what they do is they'd have the blown up drawing of the comic panel, and then the person would come out and sing and dance and, you know, have a musical number. And at one point they had Superman and Captain Marvel side by side.
Okay.
And then they had two actors dressed as Superman and Captain Marvel lifting up fake dumbbells, and they had like a little skit, and then a song comes up. But I kept thinking, who's that guy in the red? And my mom says, Captain Marvel. Who is he? He's like Superman. Why don't I ever see him? Because every once in a while you see some musical or something like that, and they'd always have Superman, they'd always show Captain Marvel. Who is this guy? You know, he looked kind of neat. But at the very end, when, you know, they were showing the credits and Carol Burnett came out saying that goodbye song, then Carol Burnett would always break out of her autograph book and have whoever the guest was sign an autograph book. Well, I think it was Raquel Welch. She was a Little Orphan Annie, and she had the little white eyeball things. And then when Carol Burnett gave her the booklet, she pulled one of the eyeballs back. It was like a little mask, and she pulled it off, you know. Oh, and then she started signing it. She was kind of giggling. Yeah, I'd kind of like to see that again. But yeah, it's Little Orphan Annie. I did see that movie. I had a date and went. It was fun.
There was a comic book adaptation of it too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know who drew it, but
Annie was a huge musical.
And McCartney owned the musical. I think it was his had something connection with it.
The girl that played Eileen Quinn.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, Eileen Quinn, I think was her name.
Yeah.
I was reading the paper, People magazine. I was at a glass place to get my windshield replaced. And, you know, he had old magazines. I was reading the People and had a picture of Eileen Quinn. You know, his little girl. She wasn't dressed as Annie. And, you know, she had long brown hair, just a typical young girl. And there's talk about her career after she did the Broadway play and then the movie. And she was always making appearances, you know, with the red stretch or orange stretch wig. And it got to be so much of a problem that the mom took Eileen Quinn to a beauty parlor, had her hair cut and permed and colored orange. And all I thought was, man, poor kid.
Yeah, it's like, you're a punishment. You're going to be Annie for life now.
It was her career, but I thought, I wonder what happened to her.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just, I just remember her in that movie, and that was it. She could be on TV now for all I know.
Yeah, well, again, that was an extremely, extremely popular play, and the movie was, a lot of people went to see it. I saw it. Not really good or bad, I mean, but a lot of people loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, anyway, let's stop right now. We'll continue next time with our with our partners in crime.
Yeah, yeah. I have no idea how long this one went on.
Oh, it's over an hour and a half, maybe an hour and 50 minutes or something.
Okay,
so.
Well, yeah, we've done better than that.
It's an epic, but yeah. All right, man.
All right, well, take care.
And we'll see you.